Welcome back to the Rob O'Donnell Show on WILK News Radio, 103.1 FM, 910, 980 AM, or anywhere on that free Odyssey app. It is 5:10, 68 degrees on this Tuesday, June 17th, 2025. So not the story I was going to get into today. I was actually going to talk about maybe I could get into it, vacation at your own risk. The most dangerous beaches in the U.S., and what dangers are there for you? Maybe I can get to that before the end of the show, but there's a breaking story from the New York Times that said Iran is preparing missiles for a possible retaliatory strike on U.S. bases, as per an official. American commanders have put troops on high alert throughout the regions as fears of a wider war grows. Now, mind you, we have the Carl Vinson Aircraft Carrier Strike Group in the vicinity. Kind of far for Iran to hit, but not out of the realm. You also have the Nimitz Aircraft Carrier Strike Group headed from the Pacific, which will be there in a couple of days, so not on scene yet. But what's being said is Iran has prepared missiles and other military equipment for strikes on U.S. bases in the Middle East should the United States join Israel's war against the country, according to American officials who have reviewed intelligence reports. The United States has sent about three dozen refueling aircraft to Europe that could be used to assist fighter jets protecting American bases, or that would be used to extend the range of bombers involved in any possible strike or Iranian nuclear facilities. Fears of a wider war are growing among American officials as Israel presses the White House to intervene in the conflict with Iran if the United States joins the campaign and strikes Fordo, a key Iranian nuclear facility, the Iranian-backed Houthi militia will almost certainly resume striking ships in the Red Sea, the officials said. They added that the pro-Iranian militias in Iraq and Syria would also probably try to attack U.S. bases there. So now you're not only talking some sort of missile ballistic drone strike, but also on-the-ground troops in places like Iraq and Syria, where they do have, you know, terrorist organizations that are allegiant to Iran on these facilities that could launch ground attacks on our military bases there, a lot of which are truly not the best fortified per public information out there. You hear the complaints and see the complaints quite often. They're nothing more than outlying small forward operating bases. So hopefully we have the right assets in the right places to make sure that they're safe. It appears that this is only if we involve ourselves. It appears we kind of are. Those tanker trucks, tanker planes that refuel our aircraft can be up there for a while. You know, I know of instances where some of our fighter jets refuel, three or four times and are up there for hours upon hours. You know, you think most missions, are, a few hours. To a target, refuel and back, or take off, refuel, do your mission and then back. But there are some missions that you're refueling, three or four times. And I know that. So could you imagine that being up there, 6, 7, 8, 9 hours in a fighter jet in that seat with all that gear on? Yeah, there are ways to go to the bathroom. Believe me, I've asked, but it's not, none of them are pleasant. So, hopefully it doesn't go here. As you heard in the news break, there are members of Congress with bipartisan support that are looking to prevent. I'm not a big fan of that because, as far as a declaration of war, no doubt, because Congress has the authority to declare war, but you cannot tie a commander-in-chief's hands when it comes to a fluid situation like this, especially with a terrorist nation. So, that's some updated information coming from the New York Times. So let me get to some vacations at your own risk. It is the summertime here. People are hoping to get away. Reading this, you hear all these things. Well, shark attacks or shark bites are so rare. They rarely, if you compare all the people in all the oceans of the United States, they're rare. But I didn't like what I was reading with this story. And this is coming from researchers at Tide Charts, a leading tide forecasting platform, are warning travelers to steer clear of the 10 dangerous beaches. What makes the beaches risky to hang out at? Shark attacks, surf-related deaths, hurricanes, of course. The Tide Chart team carefully analyzed over 500 shorelines in the U.S. and determined that Florida has the most frightening beaches. New Smyrna Beach snagged the number one spot on the list with a score of 76.92 out of 100, where 100 is the most dangerous. The Tide Chart team said that the beach, which lies on the northeastern side of Florida, is the most likely to get hit by brutal hurricanes because of its location. Well, that makes sense. That really doesn't make the beach dangerous. It just makes, you know, the weather unpredictable. And to make matters worse, this coast has earned itself the title of the shark bite capital of the world, since it has the highest likelihood of shark attacks. New Smyrna Beach also experienced 12 surf fatalities between 2010 and 2024. Doesn't really sound like a lot. I mean, one a year. Surfing's rough. Coming in number two on the terrifying list is Laguna Beach with 76.75. This Panama City beach on the shore of the Panhandle had the most surf-related deaths, 39 to be exact, of all the analyzed beaches, in addition to 9 shark attacks. So Panama City Beach, 9 shark attacks. Popular tourist destination Daytona Beach, just north of New Smyrna Beach, came in third on the list with a score of 64.47, thanks to the beach's powerful currents and riptides. There have been 27 reported surf deaths and almost 70 shark attacks. Daytona Beach, 70 shark attacks. Now, Daytona Beach is a popular beach. I'm sure there's a lot of people there. So is it sheer numbers? Are they minor attacks, major attacks? But when I heard the numbers, I, you know, started thinking twice. I remember being in Orange Beach in Pensacola, and you're standing there in waist-deep water, and all of a sudden, 4 or 5 foot shark swims by. Water's pretty clear, so you could see it clear as day. When we were in the bay in Orange Beach, there's a little island there. There were hammerheads all over the place. And you're playing, you just, you know, kind of wade back away from them. But there are sharks around, by no doubt. Beware of Miami Beach lovers. The coast ranked number 4 with a 46.49 score, 13 related deaths, and almost 20 shark attacks. And some India Atlantic Ocean Beach Park might be considered the smallest beach boardwalk in the world, but it sure is mighty. The hazardous beach earned itself a score of 44.64 with 9 surf fatalities and 30 shark attacks. So your top 10, New Smyrna Beach in Florida, Laguna Beach in Florida, Daytona Beach in Florida, Miami Beach in Florida, India Atlantic Beach Boardwalk in Florida, Cocoa Beach in Florida, Palm Beach in Florida, Miramar Heights Beach in Florida, Cape Canaveral in Florida, and Jupiter Beach Park in Florida. Those are the most 10 most dangerous beaches. I'd look into who wrote this article because I guarantee you they're from California. no doubt there. And if you've ever been to the Pacific, if you have ever been to the ocean in the Pacific, it is a different animal. It is cold. It's really cold. Just like, you know, when you're up in the Cape Cod, Nantucket area, Boston area, the beaches up there, Hull, that water's pretty cold too. Until you get to the middle of the winter, the middle of the summer. Then it is at least tolerable, but still way too cold. But that being said, if you're going on vacation this year, beware. Make sure you have knowledge of your riptides, the undertows, the currents, and sharks, because absolutely no doubt. I was down on Virginia Beach last year. I stepped on a stingray or something like that. Scared the hell out of me, but it thankfully didn't whack me. But those are the those are some of the crazy beaches there. If you're planning on going somewhere this summer, let us know what beach you're going to. I got to figure out where we're going to go. Probably Virginia Beach, but we'll figure it out. I'm watching the news now, and this New York controller who's running for mayor, who was arrested today by ICE for obstructing federal agents. Listen, tell me you're losing an election and you want attention without telling me you're losing an election and want attention. This guy's following the playbook of the California senator that was out in Kristi Noem's press conference, where ICE agents walked up to this illegal immigrant in a courthouse, and this guy locked his arm with him and refused to let it go. And they tried to separate him. They told him to stop obstructing. They physically made them pry him off of him, locking arms. He resisted further, kept pushing against the law enforcement. This video of it, so you could see it. It's clear obstruction. And he was arrested. Good. But make no mistake, this was all about attention, because he's running for mayor and probably in fifth or sixth place, and wants attention. You know, he thinks there is a segment of New York that will gravitate towards him because of this, and he knows that, and it's just why he did it, because there's no consequences. Yeah, he was arrested. He'll be slapped with a ticket or a fine, but watch the video for yourself. It's clearly obstruction. And thankfully, he was arrested, and hopefully it continues. Welcome back to the Rob O'Donnell Show on WILK News Radio. It's 5:26. Got a text message. Well, first, I got two text messages from the same texter. Said, Rob, I thought you were taking your wife to Aruba. Aruba is going to be more of an anniversary. It's our 30th anniversary in October. So we were thinking Aruba for then. Still up in the air. But that's the plan, tentative plan. That's the... the wish, I guess, what we're thinking about. But, you know, with a lot of other things going on, I don't know what we'll be able to do and not be able to do. They also asked, Rob, AI and the way it's regulated in the Big Beautiful Bill. Could you have any info on that for Wednesday? Well, I can get that for you today, because you ask, we listen here. I like to please. I had a little time, and I was able to do a little research during the break. And, you know, the Big Beautiful Bill, H.R. 1, that passed the House of Representatives, and it's been back and forth through the Senate. It includes a provision in Section 43201C that imposes a 10-year moratorium on state and local governments enforcing laws or regulations that limit, restrict, or otherwise regulate artificial intelligence, AI, models, systems, or automated decision systems involved in interstate commerce. Here's a breakdown about how the bill addresses AI regulation. Well, the moratorium on state AI regulation, the scope, the bill prohibits states and local governments from enforcing existing or new AI-related laws for a decade, starting from the bill's enactment. This applies to all AI models, systems, automated decision systems, and are broadly defined to include machine-based systems that make predictions, recommendations, or decisions influencing real or virtual environments. The impact of this moratorium would override more than 60 state AI laws already enacted, covering issues like algorithmic discrimination, deepfakes, and AI use in government, as well as hundreds of pending bills, for example, Tennessee's Elvis Act, which protects artists from AI-generated voice impersonations, and California bills on AI companion platforms would be unenforceable. There are exceptions. States can enforce laws that facilitate the deployment, operation, or adoption of AI systems, are generally applicable, and treat AI systems the same as non-AI systems performing comparable functions, impose reasonable cost-based fees or bonds that apply to AI and non-AI systems. Now, the proponents, including tech industry groups like the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, argue that a patchwork of state laws creates a regulatory burdens for companies, potentially hindering U.S. competitiveness in the global AI race, particularly in China. Basically, it's almost impossible for an AI company to navigate hundreds of laws throughout every state in the nation. So they're saying these laws have to be federally based and streamlined. The bill allocates $500 million over 10 years to modernize the federal information technology system using AI, aiming to enhance operational efficiency, automation, and cybersecurity. It centralizes AI regulation authority at the federal level, what I just said, with no comprehensive federal AI governance framework currently in place. Critics note that this creates a regulatory vacuum as Congress has no draft federal AI legislation to replace state efforts. So, that's pretty much where you're at there. So that's, hope it answered your question. But like I said, you ask, we bring it to you. Great question. Great thing to look into. So there's an issue. Basically, it puts companies that are looking to bring this to our markets at a disadvantage from other countries like China because of each state, if they have different rules, different regulations, getting algorithms and systems online would be near impossible. So we'll see that. Somebody said, let's mention the Iranian newscast was bombed live on the air. Got to believe the people there will uprise against their tyrant government. That's Joe from 44. I did talk about that yesterday. It was pretty comical as she's telling us that they will reign supreme and nothing to worry about. Her studio blows up. So it was kind of funny. Live like a terrorist, get treated like a terrorist. Sorry, that's the way it works. It's 5:31 here at WILK. It's time for the news with Paul Michaels. Welcome back to the Rob O'Donnell Show on WILK News Radio. I'm getting reports that Department of Homeland Security Secretary Kristi Noem was rushed to the hospital by an ambulance in Washington, D.C. Now, reports are she is conscious. She's talking to those around her, but hopefully it's nothing serious at this point. Hopefully it's just precautionary. But that's the latest I have here, so we'll see if we get any information before the end of the show. It's the alleged Minnesota assassin, Vance Boatler, text his family now. Now they're starting to dig into everything that's surrounding this individual, and I'm sure we're not going to find out a whole lot of it. I think there's going to be a lot of, unfortunately, secrecy around this. I did see Governor Tim Walz made a statement that he now regrets some of the inflammatory rhetoric that he's made and stood by that it needs to be toned down. It's interesting also that a big deal is being made on progressive media that Donald Trump has not called Tim Walz, the governor of Minnesota, in regards to those assassinations. But let me note that Governor Tim Walz, who was also vice presidential candidate, did not call Donald Trump after either of his assassination attempts and actually stepped up his rhetoric of calling him a dictator and such like that. So that's the counterpoint to the media saying that Donald Trump has not called Tim Walz. But the messages that this alleged assassin sent to his family are chilling. Chilling. Alleged Minnesota assassin Vance Boatler. Texas family, dad went to war last night, hours after his deadly shooting spree early Saturday. According to federal prosecutors, the madman who killed the state representative and her husband and wounded another politician and his wife at their homes, and I believe one of their dogs, sent the chilling message to his wife and other relatives in a group thread around 6:15 a.m. that day, the criminal complaint said. So this is in the affidavit. Dad went to war last night. I don't want to say more because I don't want to implicate anybody, the individual wrote. He also sent an apologetic message to his wife around the same time. Words are not going to explain how sorry I am for the situation. There's going to be some people coming to the house armed and trigger happy, and I don't want you guys around. And that also according to court documents. Authorities who searched Jenny Boatler's car as they hunted down the alleged killer found $10,000 in cash, passports for her and at least some of the couple's kids who were in the car with her at the time of the traffic stop. If you recall, while they were searching for her husband, they did a car stop on her and found $10,000 in cash and passports. She was released, and it's my guess that they were monitoring her whereabouts quite strictly, and hopefully using her and the family as bait to get him his whereabouts. As per reports, they reportedly have 5 children. So now he faces both federal and state charges for murder, former state house. And that's all evidence that will be used against him in a court of law. Family will be brought in to testify that that is, in fact, the text message that they got. That is, in fact, his phone number. But it appears that he's got enough. When police cornered him in that field in Minnesota, and I know members that were on the task force there that apprehended him, he told them exactly who he was. He surrendered like a coward, which is good for them. It's good. Hopefully we can get some more answers. Don't keep your fingers crossed, though. But he did identify who he was immediately. He put his hands up, and he said exactly who he was and gave some sort of confession. So I guess we'll see more of that as it comes out. It's interesting because I posted the picture, one of the arrests. There's several of the arrest pictures, but I posted one of the pictures. And it says very similar to news pictures that were out there. And I was like, oh, where do you think they got it from? So interesting that that was the case. And we did take the time to black out some of the officers' faces in the background because there were 2 faces that were visible. So, that's the latest on a couple of stories that we have brewing right now. It is 5:42 here at WILK. Time for 2020 traffic and weather together. Which kind of weather you want, Jake? You want the summary version or the real version?
The Rob O'Donnell version.
The Rob O'Donnell version?
Hell yeah.
All right. Storm Tracker 16 forecast. We're going to have some rain. And then a little cooler at night. Then we're going to have some more rain. Then it's going to be a little cooler at night. It's going to be warmer tomorrow. Some sun, but then some rain more. And then Thursday, even warmer. But the only chance of rain and more rain. So that's the weather. Welcome back to the Rob O'Donnell Show on WILK News Radio. If you missed the breaking news a little while ago, Department of Homeland Security Secretary Kristi Noem was rushed to the hospital via ambulance. She is conscious and alert. She is talking to people. But while in D.C., there was some sort of medical emergency where she was rushed to a hospital via ambulance, which was escorted by multiple Secret Service vehicles. So that's all we have at this time. Again, she is conscious and alert and speaking. We don't know the reason for the call. The fact that they just didn't take her themselves because they have lights and sirens leads me to believe that she needed some sort of immediate medical attention from paramedics or EMTs on the scene. So we'll see where this goes, and hopefully the best for her. Hopefully, you know, it's my guess being she's a very petite and thin woman. I think she's hopefully just overstressing her body. It's a big jump going from the governor of a small state to the Secretary of Homeland Security with everything that entails. And she has been nonstop on the ground since she's gotten this position. So hopefully it's an exhaustion type thing that kind of caught up with her. And if it is that, you know, hopefully she takes the necessary time to make sure she's okay to do this, because I think she's done a good job so far. I like what she's done, so hopefully it's all works out for the best. So this next story I got, Jake, it's my second to last story because I didn't get to it. This South Carolina quarterback, Lenora Sellers, turned down a staggering $8 million transfer offer as his father. Now, just about anything can be bought with $8 million, but it couldn't lure a quarterback, Lenora Sellers, away from South Carolina. Now, he's a South Carolina Gamecock quarterback. He's a very good quarterback at that. His father told the Atlantic, Bruce Feldman, that his son was offered a 2-year, $8 million national in name and likeness offer from another school, which he declined. So they're not saying what the other school is. He was offered all kinds of crazy numbers, Norris Sellers said. I told him he could say I'm going to stay or I'm going to go. But my two cents is it was to get into college on a scholarship, play ball, get our degree, and go on about our business. Now, this he's talking about his – this is the father talking about him and his son. The NIL deal came later. We didn't come here to make money. We came here to get our education. Play ball, and with schools calling, we're not going to jump ship because they're offering more than what we're getting. If it ain't broke, don't fix it. Linares echoed the sentiment, saying, I've been playing football all my life for free. I've built relationships here. My family's here. My brother's here. There's no reason for me to go someplace else to start over. Now, this young man, who's a junior, going to be a senior this year in college, was just offered $8 million to transfer school for the 2 years. And he said, nope, I came here to get an education. Here's where my roots are. I'm not going to do it. Jake, you got to respect that.
I respect the hell out of that. And especially in this day and age with NIL and how it has sort of taken over college football. I mean, there's really no other way around it. And you've seen and heard all the stories over the past couple of years when I think a good example is Drew Aller from Penn State could have gone in this year's NFL draft and stayed another year. Money came calling. And that's another thing, too. This past weekend with it being Father's Day and for his dad to give his input on it, you know, to take your father's input and to be that loyal, obviously knowing that you're going to be an NFL draft prospect in 2026, probably first or second round, I would imagine, it definitely says a lot about his character. And I mean, again, I just, like you were saying, Rob, I respect the hell out of it, because another thing is we often see this so many times in the National Football League, not just quarterbacks, but running backs, wide receivers especially, pretty much anyone, any position in the National Football League. You're offered money at a young age, and you see how there's been so many guys that have played this game over the years that don't know what to do with that money. And then next thing you know, 5-10 years down the road, you hear that this one or that one is bankrupt. So definitely a great decision, good head of shoulders, and definitely a ton of respect to himself and his father, the way that they handled it.
Yeah, I think this is going to pay him dividends when he goes to the draft or for pro football, because a lot of owners, a lot of GMs, a lot of coaches are going to see this kid's dedication, to see his commitment, and want to jump on him.
Absolutely.
I mean, you look at it, the $8 million is an eye-popping figure, even compared with some of the most expensive NIL offers out there publicized recently. Now, I don't know if this is the highest NIL that's out there, but the Texas Signal caller, Quinn Ewers.
Yeah, he was drafted by the Dolphins.
Yeah, he was rumored to have been offered $6 million by an unnamed school to forgo the NFL draft and enter the transfer portal. He did not pounce, instead he opted to go pro. Carson Beck reportedly signed a $4 million NIL deal to transfer to Miami after going 24-3 as Georgia's primary starting quarterback in 2023 and 2024.
Could have been in the draft this year, but obviously.
Yeah. Now you look at Sellers. Sellers led the Gamecocks to a 9-4 record in 2024, and they play a rough schedule.
SEC,
they
play
some,
baby.
Yeah, they play some top teams. He passed for over 2,500 yards, 18 touchdowns, and he'll look to build on those numbers in 2025.
Like,
you know, his coach couldn't praise him enough because he was able to keep him, but he said he's made of the right stuff. South Carolina head coach Shane Beamer said he's got a great family around him. He knows what he means to the state. Linares has a chance to leave a legacy here. I think he just did.
Oh, without a doubt. Yeah.
And, you know, they're going to have to do something with this NIL. And listen, I understand colleges make bank on these young men. Mm-hmm. You know, they make a killing on them as far as, you know, the promotions. Just look at stadiums and look at the money behind the football program. And it's interesting when you see the people as far as the education of these universities go. We see it here with Penn State all the time.
Yeah.
Anytime there's something with football, like, oh, you know, what if they put that money towards a library or education, you have to realize the football team makes money for the school. And even in high school sports, football is the only entity that makes money for any out of any sport. But on the college level, it actually, you know, supports itself. But now you get the national letter, the likeness and name and likeness. In there, and it's ruining the sport. I mean, this young man is the exception right now. I mean, where you have everybody just talking about what where they're going to get theirs. You have high school students going into college, going, you know, who's going to pay me the most? Yeah. That's not what college football is about. And I think we're going to see that trickle-up effect to where the pros are going to start wanting nothing to do with these individuals because it's like that entitled generation we see now of the workforce, of regular, everyday people. You put that into the sport, you put that onto the gridiron with football, and it's not going to be tolerated for very long.
No, not at all, especially in the National Football League. And the other thing that you wonder, too, is you're offered that kind of money in college. You go to the NFL, and especially I think back to the early 2010s, 2008, 2010, I think of the deals that Matt Ryan, Matt Stafford, Sam Bradford got. They hadn't even played a single down in the NFL at that point, and you're getting drafted third overall like Matt Ryan was, or number one overall like Matt Stafford and Sam Bradford were, and you're already getting paid more money than some premier quarterbacks in the National Football League. Obviously, the NFL clamped down on that. So when you think of it, I'm sure there's probably some people that were like, I'm making more money in college. Do I really need to go to the NFL? Do I really want to? And then again, like we talked about, some of these people 5-10 years down the road, oh, hey, so-and-so, they're filing for bankruptcy because some people, they just, not all of them, but some, they just don't know how to handle it.
Well, the Sanders kid, didn't he just buy like a $13 million home wherever his college is? And he doesn't even earn a spot yet.
Yeah, drafted in the fifth round by the Cleveland Browns.
Yep.
Good stuff.
Then they're going to need to do something here because it's ruining the sport. College. I transitioned from pro to college football because of the drive there, because of the camaraderie, because of the school spirit. And you know, it's getting harder to harder when we bring this in. And you could tell when these teams play, when you see those players out there with these NIL price tags on them and such like that, who they think they are and how they interact with the press, that entitled attitude. And, you know, listen, play football. That's what people came to say.
That's part of the reason why Shedeur Sanders fell to the fifth round. I don't care what anyone says. Yeah, you might have had a first-round talent or a second-round grade on you. I know a lot of teams did. But when you're Deion Sanders' son, no matter how athletic you are, no matter what, when you're flashing watches and chains after a first down or a touchdown or anything, that's definitely going to rub a lot of people the wrong way. So
it is indeed. Yeah. Is indeed. I just put this story up on my Facebook page so you can check it out there. You're going to want to give it a read. Give this young man a follow. I'm sure he's on social media somewhere. He definitely deserves the recognition. Lehigh Valley Health Network, part of Jefferson Health, presents the Lackawanna County Scrantastic Spectacular. It's going to be Thursday, July 3rd, Courthouse Square in Scranton. It kicks off at 4 p.m. Live entertainment, food trucks, kids zones, vendors, live on the square. The full Northeast Pennsylvania Philharmonic on the main stage at 7:30. The Zambelli Fireworks, presented in part by Quality Roofing Express at 9:35. It's sponsored by Scranton Tomorrow, Lackawanna County Commissioners, City of Scranton, and Odyssey. You can check it out at WILKNewsRadio.com. We'll be back. Well, that's it for the Rob O'Donnell Show today. I am seeing now that DHS Secretary Kristi Noem was transported out of abundance of caution. She is alert and recovering and speaking, conscious and alert, and it seems like is doing okay. So hopefully, again, hopefully it was just exhaustion. Hopefully it was just, being overwhelmed by the nonstop position that she no doubt has and is leading. So we wish her all the best. Hopefully, in a few hours we hear everything's fine. I'm sure she'll make a statement if it is. If not, we'll talk to you more about it tomorrow. But hopefully she gets whatever care she needs, maybe an IV, some fluids, and a protein shake. That's all I'm saying. It's 6 o'clock here at WILK. We'll see you tomorrow. Maybe we won't. I don't know. Nothing's guaranteed. God bless. Be safe.